Frog went a-cutting in a heated ride. Frog went a-cutting in a heated ride. Frog went a-cutting in a heated ride with a sword and a pistol by his side.
In the summer of 1998, Lee got together with three of his grandchildren, Walt, Amory, and Owen, so they could ask him questions about his life and how he got to be. I'm Shelley Schlender. Lee was my dad. Along with being the dad of Deb, Steph, Cindy, Chase, and Fernanda, the husband of Betsy, and the grandfather of Amber, Sonia, those three guys, Ariel, Raleigh, Ross, Aiden, Kenyon, Nora, and Little Lee, all family that Lee knew and loved. What follows is part one of a two-hour recording from 1998, starting with the warm-up session, where Lee talked with Walt, Amory, and Owen about the difference between being taught and being learned.
Took Miss Massey on his knees, said, Miss Massey, will you marry me?
I was a teacher at age 21.
You were a teacher?
I taught history in the college.
Huh.
When I was going to law school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be able to teach, I guess, but I don't know that I ever want to do it. Well, I mean, I'll teach people when it's informal, but
What's
I don't
What's the difference between teaching someone and learning someone?
It's improper grammar you're using,
Ellie.
No, it's
not.
Yes.
Learning
someone.
When you
get out in the world, you'll understand what I'm saying. What do you think the difference is, Amory?
Well, the difference is one's proper grammar and one's improper.
Well, I know what you mean. Like, learn somebody would be, in the old days, it was like teach somebody by brute force, almost.
That's learning them.
Yes. And teaching them is...
Okay, now you
okay,
learn
now
this.
Okay, now you want to do this.
It'll be
and
okay.
That and... You know.
Now learning them
like
is just kind of pounding it into their head.
Yeah.
And he doesn't obey, then you pick up a club and whack him.
Yeah, you teach him
learning.
A lesson.
That's learning him.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference.
And teaching
yeah, but
him
I mean,
is...
Sometimes with children. When all else fails, you learn them.
I don't know. See, the thing is, if the child is motivated and actually wants to learn something...
How many children are motivated?
I'd say about... 3-4%.
Which means that 96% have to be learned.
Exactly.
Yep.
And, you know, most of those guys who have to be learned, well, they never get learned, so therefore
they
learned that they needed to be taught too late, I guess.
No, they learned that they needed to be learned too late.
Well, yeah, you know. Like when they actually get out into the real world, then the problems start.
Okay.
And it may be too
you.
Late.
Yeah.
You, come on
Konnichiwa.
In, Betsy.
Konnichiwa. Hola. Deutschemaschte des Nix. Well, that isn't for each
okay.
mixing. I think a lot of those are for single mixing control.
Yeah, maybe. System. Well, do you want me to start? Say something, Owen.
Oh.
Well, don't start talking.
You
the
have
questions.
To just start talking. So
talk normal.
Hello, just like ask the questions.
Okay.
What's your favorite color, Lee?
Okay. What were your parents' names?
No, don't ask questions after that. We'll get a chance.
Okay.
To
random questions.
Like, what's your favorite color?
What's your favorite type of bike?
How many hairs do you think you have?
Your favorite type of bike.
Favorite. That's immaterial. I'm not going to discuss
Oh,
that.
That's a bow tie for me.
Oh, yeah.
Tie.
Bow ties are nice.
You mean tie that you wear?
No, it's...
Hey, just a second, boys. I'm serious about this. Don't ask me minutia.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not interested in it.
Well, I guess we could probably get started now.
Okay, so where...
Well, wait, he'll tell us. Is he started?
He says
okay.
Go.
Okay. Where did your dad's family come from?
Well, let's see. You started out with Adam and Eve. Do you want me to take you all the way through?
No, only...
Let me tell you about the Turners. The Turners were in Virginia in the early 1600s. The family ultimately migrated to around Roanoke, Virginia, in the Shenandoah Valley. Now, we know that in, 1790, in 1790, there were three brothers named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego Turner. But before them were Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We are descendants of Meshach Turner. Meshach Turner had about 5,000 acres in the Shenandoah Valley. And incidentally, he died in 1790 of prostate cancer. And the reason I mention prostate cancer is that genetic defect has run in the Turner family up to the present time. Now, he had a number of sons, and in around 1835, we know that one of the sons was in Georgia, where he had received money from his family and gone to Georgia. And we have a tintype of a picture of he and our direct great-great-great-grandmother. He's holding a Bible, and both of them looked like they could bite nails without any effort. They really were mean-looking people, but very religious. They were Baptists. They had a son who, in 1840, migrated from Georgia with his slaves to Texas and settled in the Dallas, Texas area. In turn, they had a number of children, of whom our direct ancestor was Thomas Jefferson Turner, who was a soldier in the Confederate side of the Civil War. After the Civil War, and he became old, he died in the Confederate home in San Antonio. And you go to San Antonio, you see his quarters, where he lived in the later years of his life. He became quite religious, again, in the Baptist faith. Most of the time during the Civil War, he was stationed in areas around the Mississippi River. He, in turn, had a number of children, one of whom was one of the first graduates of Baylor University at Waco, Texas. His son, who's our direct ancestor and my grandfather, was Frank Turner, who moved from Dallas to Indian Territory, Davis, Oklahoma, just north of the Texas border. My father was born August 26 of 1897. And as a child, he recalls Indian camps in the Indian Territories and traveling in a covered wagon into Oklahoma in Indian Territory. His family had quite a large number of brothers and one sister, and he learned to be an expert shot with a rifle. He'd be given 10 bullets and was required to bring home 10 squirrels. And if he didn't bring home 10 squirrels, he was severely punished. Now, my father was really quite bright, but he would have to leave school to pick cotton. And thus in grade school, instead of spending full time learning, probably half of the time was spent in cultivating and picking cotton for the family support. When he was 12 years old, he got into an enormous fight with his father that reached the point that his father, who had punished him severely and had the philosophy of spare the rod, spoil the child. In other words, he physically punished him to the point that my father, at age 12, produced a rifle and threatened to shoot his father. And shortly after that, he left home. And he had a choice at that time of either taking his rifle or his violin. He chose the violin. He set out from southern Oklahoma and traveled at age 12 to a place called Kinsley, Kansas, which is about 45 miles from Great Bend, Kansas, where he went to work on a farm. The interesting thing is that I've tried jury cases at Kinsley, Kansas, 40 years ago, and had people come to me and tell me what a tremendous worker my father was for them. And he had a great reputation. Now, he worked at Kinsley, Kansas until World War I broke out. And in 1917, he enlisted in the Navy. Before he enlisted, he met my mother. My mother's family were the Hamptons. And they were homesteaders in Kinsley when Edwards County was first formed. Now, I'll back up a moment, and I'll talk about my grandmother, who died at age 95. Her name was Shaw. When the Fort Larned was taken over by the government and made a national monument and run by the Department of Interior, they were trying to rebuild Fort Larned in exactly the manner in which it was operating as a frontier Indian fort. Now, for example, at Fort Larned in 1854, many of the great generals of the Civil War were officers who were stationed there. Custer, for example, Jeb Stuart, who was commander of the Confederate cavalry, many, many very famous people involved in the Civil War were stationed there when they were first and second lieutenants and that type of thing. Now, they had just started the reconstruction, and she was out to visit the fort. And she looked, and she says, "You have it all wrong." And the superintendent said, "What do you mean?" She says, "That wasn't the way it was at all." He says, "Tell me." And she says, "Well, the commissary was over there, and where they cooked was over here," and she described all those places completely different. He said, "How did you know?" She says, "I know because we came out in the early 1870s from Kansas City. My father was a doctor. And we came out by covered wagon and stayed at Fort Larned for 3 weeks when I was 6 years old." And she said, "I remember how it was." They proceeded then to rebuild Fort Larned in the way in which she said it was, because she was the only person they had ever known who had been at Fort Larned when it was an active frontier fort. At any rate, she married Abe Hampton, and they moved to Kinsley, where they were pioneer farmers or settlers. Now, back up a moment about Abe Hampton. Abe Hampton lost his mother and father and lived at St. Joseph, Missouri. His uncle was a judge there. When Abe turned 18, the judge says, "Here's $100, and I am going to keep the rest of your parents' estate for having raised you," and expelled him from his home. So he set out on his own at age 18 and ended up at Kinsley, Kansas, where he produced 6 or 7 boys and 1 girl. My mother was the second from the oldest, and she had to raise her brothers as they came along. A little history on my mother. You've all seen from pictures or photographs that she was very attractive, and she had a great singing voice. But because there were so many boys in the family, at age 5, her mother told her that she would have to help in all the household work and chores, including changing the diapers, cleaning, washing, all of those things she was required to do. And if she didn't do them, she would be punished severely at age 5 or 6. She, for example, never had a birthday party, never received any presents at Christmas or any other time, but she had pets. I didn't find until later in my life that she had a dog. And the dog's name was Watch. And she felt that Watch was waiting for her in heaven. She had a horse named Pet. And these creatures were very much alive to her. Now, in elocution, she had a great reputation going through school, and she developed it by speaking to the cows in the barn. And she would speak so that they would lift their heads up and listen to her. And she did very well in high school. As a matter of fact, immediately out of high school, she became a school teacher to a country school. And she had to ride a horse to school. And she'd wear a large alarm clock around her neck, which kept time in the schools. One incident in particular, the King of England, or the Prince of England, Edward, was going through Kinsley on a special train. And she was headed from Kinsley on her horse to her country school 4 miles away. Now, she had long black curls, and you can imagine what she looked like on her horse with the alarm clock, a big, very, very attractive. Well, the train was stopped, and the king sent word that he would like to speak to her. And my mother, who felt she had royal blood in her veins, dating back to William the Conqueror, which incidentally was true, sent word to them that if the king wanted to talk to her, he could come to her, which kind of illustrates the independence of my mother. At any rate, she met my father just shortly before World War I, and the occurrence of the wedding was in what's called the Opera House at Kinsley. And on the third floor was a skating rink, and that was one of the great recreational activities at Kinsley. And she recalls that she was skating. She was an expert skater. And here was this young man who was 3 years older than she was, and he was trying to skate and doing very poorly. And the boy that she was with was a pretty good skater, but my father, in trying to skate, lost control, reached out, grabbed the boy's necktie, and proceeded to go around him at a very fast rate 3 times, and both of them ended up on the floor. My mother thought that was quite amusing. At any rate, they became acquainted and started to go together, and then he left for the war. He was in the Navy on the battleship Missouri, and made 4 or 5 crossings in World War I. My mother at that time, who had decided that she liked him a lot, worked part-time in the post office. And she noticed in the post office another girl was writing letters to him. And so she proceeded to throw the letters away, which is a felony. You could go to the penitentiary for that sort of thing. But at any rate, he came home from the Navy, and very quickly they married, and he went to work on the Santa Fe Railroad as a fireman. Now, being a fireman is enormously difficult work on steam locomotives because you have to keep up the steam by shoveling coal. Now, some of the trips would take 16 hours, and you constantly had to shovel coal to keep the fire burning and keep the steam up. And so at that time, all of the firemen became immensely strong men. And when I later worked on the railroad, I knew most of them. And even at older age, at 50, 60, some of them 70, were enormously strong men. He worked as a fireman. And in around 1925, they converted many of the coal burners to oil. That meant you didn't have to scoop coal anymore. My father became an excellent fireman in the use of oil. Excellent money, as railroad men were in those days. And in 1928, they bought a house, or built a house, in Newton, Kansas, on Magnolia Street. I was born July 26th of 1927, and shortly after I was born, we moved to the house on Magnolia Street and lived there for approximately 2.5 years. where he took a branch line job at Dodge City because he wanted to build a country home and have acreage where he could raise crops. I do recall when we lived on Magnolia that he would tell me if I would collect worms for him that he would take me fishing. And I recall from 2 years old on to about four that every night when I went to bed, I would have two pockets full of worms, always waiting and hoping for the day that he would take me fishing. Incidentally, he never took me fishing. And the worms died uselessly. In talking to my older sister, who is 4 years older, I recall things that happened when I was 2 years old at the Magnolia House. And she tells me that my recollection is excellent. I recall, for example, where the telephone was. Recall when I was, I think, 2 and a half, going to the phone and telling the operator that I wanted to talk to my mommy. And the operator kept telling me to hang up, little boy. And that must have gone on for 10 minutes because I wouldn't leave the phone until she contacted my mommy. And the operator, of course, had no idea of who my mommy was. My father was great for home remedies. Again, when I was between 2 and 3 years old, I was in the process of dying. I had some kind of disease in the mouth, and I couldn't eat. My sister tells me, my mother also told me this, that I was turning blue. The doctor told them that I was going to die because I couldn't eat any food and hadn't eaten any for a long time. My father then got a syringe and alum water and syringed alum water in my mouth until the blisters or whatever it was in the mouth closed up. With the result, I was able to eat and survived. I recall another time where I had ringworm. My father, who smoked at that time, smoked a pipe, took nicotine from the pipe and put it on the ringworm, and the instant he did so, I went out like a light. But guess what? Killed the ringworm. They were great on home remedies of that type. At any rate, they felt financially very well off. And so they sold their house at Newton and went to Dodge City and built a new house at Dodge City on what was called the Fort Dodge Road. They had been in that house for about 3 years when the Depression hit. And when the Depression hit, over half of the workers on the railroad were furloughed. In other words, lost their jobs. And there was hardly any work to be had anywhere. And I have a recollection of, for example, when I was 5 years old, I could hear them talking at night about where they were going to get the food for the three children the next day. That's how close it was between survival and non-survival. Both my mother and father were enormously proud people and wouldn't think of ever taking welfare. At the Fort Dodge house, they took the carpet off of the living room and hung it between the living room and dining room so they wouldn't have to heat the living room. In 1932, I was 5 years old, and I recall Christmas came. And we had a very small Christmas tree, and when I woke up on Christmas Day, under the Christmas tree was a rubber ball Santa Claus had left for me. And that satisfied me totally about Christmas because Santa Claus had not forgotten me. I think at that time in March is when you voted for president. And that would have been in 32, 5 years old. My mother had been a staunch Republican all her life. My father tended to vote Democratic. But I recall the day that they went to town to vote against Hoover, who was president at that time. At that period of time, we had tremendous dust bowls. And in March, with the wind blowing out of the northwest, you would send billows of dirt 30, 40,000 feet into the sky. And when you saw a dirt storm approaching, it was like light turned into darkness. It would be so dark that you couldn't see. It was like the dead of night. One of those dust storms had just gone through Dodge City. The curtains were all heavily laden with dust, and they went to town to vote against Hoover, leaving my older sister and I alone. Again, I was not quite 5 years old, and she was 4 years older. And I recall precisely, we played on a wine-colored sofa up against the north windows for about 4 hours before they got home, because they blamed most of the problems on Hoover. Now, the Depression, as it was called, involved at least 25% of the workforce unable to find jobs. My father did everything that possibly came along to make money for his family. In the process, and people do this in extremis, he got involved with religion, and a fundamental type of religion, even more fundamental than the Baptists, which strain ran through the family. Involved it with religion, he ended up going to church sometimes 5 and 7 days or nights a week. The ministers that were involved in the church were a rapacious group. We lost our home in Dodge City. It was foreclosed by the Clutter Lindis Lumber Company, which had a lien for the materials that went into building the house. When that happened, without a job, my mother and he and the family moved back to Kinsley, where the family owned a home, not a very big home, in the country on a section of Sandhill land. My father drove a school car for a time. Anything to make money to provide for the care and maintenance of the family. One of the fundamentalist ministers, Oral Roberts, who you've never heard of, who became a very famous preacher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, worth many millions of dollars, was one of those preachers at Kinsley, Kansas. At one period of time, again, very difficult to support a wife and three children, they moved a preacher in with us who did absolutely no work. His name was the Reverend Earl Spotts. And he required my mother to cook for him, to do his washing. And at one point, I remember a big argument between my mother and father over the fact that he had managed to acquire a steer which was slaughtered. And this would provide meat for the family for several months. The ministers came in and demanded 1/4 of the steer. And notwithstanding the objections of my mother, my father gave 1/4 of the steer to the ministers. I was very young at the time, 6, 7 years old, but I was required to go to church. And the one thing I learned was to spot a phony 5 miles away, because an awful lot of these people that were so-called men of God were just the opposite. They were very rapacious. And, pardon? As a young person, you begin to understand and see people of that type. Now, we've reached the point in this soliloquy where we need another question.
Okay. What were your parents' names?
My father's name was Lester O'Brien Turner, and my mother's name was Eva Maybell Hampton.
Okay.
What was their wedding like?
Pardon?
What was their wedding like?
From what they've told me, when they determined they would be married, they had a home ceremony, and quick and short, he took 3 days off, and they honeymooned at Wichita, Kansas. And he went back to work immediately thereafter. I'll say this for my father. All the time growing up, when he had a job and was back to work on the railroad, He never missed a trip. In other words, he worked constantly. He was what you'd call a very good provider.
What did they like about each other? Your parents said it.
Well, that's kind of, you know, what did your mother and father like about each other? They were young people, and they were attracted to each other, and they were married. My father was very strong, a very vital person. Okay, what's the next question?
What kinds of work or school were they in before they got met?
Well, I've already talked about that.
Oh.
She became a school teacher out of grade school, and or out of high school, and he got to the sixth grade. Now, I will say this about the sixth grade education he got, which was kind of hit and miss because he had to work on the farm. He taught himself algebra and higher mathematics and was excellent at it. He was quite intelligent. He was the oldest son in the family. And the younger brothers followed him from southern Oklahoma to Kansas as a result of him coming to Kansas. He was sort of the leader of the family.
A little piece of cornbread laying on the shelf, uh-huh. A little piece of cornbread laying on the shelf, uh-huh.
You've been listening to a recording of Lee talking with three of his grandkids, Walt, Amory, and Owen, in the summer of 1998. This has been part one.